Our mission is to bring you an unbiased discussion on the technological development and application of unmanned aerial systems in our airspace. UAS Today.
Hey folks, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Michael Garrity. With me as always is my assistant, my partner in crime, Miss Bethany Farrell. Got a great show lined up for you today. We will be discussing some recent court rulings that were overturned by the Supreme Court involving the use of unmanned aerial systems in today's podcast. We'll also be interviewing Mr. Warren Causey. Warren is the co-founder of the Sirens Project. The Sirens Project is a group of individuals who have designed a small unmanned aerial system that will fly into the tornadoes to collect additional research data in hopes of giving us a better warning time on when tornadoes are going to touch down. Before we get started on today's podcast, there are two points of business that I'd like to bring up. The first one is sending out a fond farewell and a thank you to Mr. Michael Toscano of AUVSI. Mr. Toscano is the president and CEO of AUVSI, and he has done a lot for the unmanned aerial system community in America as far as helping with the regulations and bringing research groups, businesses, and other interest groups together in the hopes that we will see a successful integration of unmanned aerial systems. He is retiring. I'd like to wish him a fond farewell and say on behalf of everybody here at UAS Today, thank you for your service, and we wish you the best of luck. The second piece of business that I want to bring up today is specifically relating to the regulations and the information that is currently out there about unmanned aerial systems. I'm asking all my listeners and the friends and family members of my listeners to get involved in the integration of unmanned aerial systems. I want to thank you for listening to the program, but it's not enough. I need you to go out and I need you to get involved. And how do you get involved? That's easy. When we talk about the integration of unmanned aerial systems into our national airspace, we're not just talking about Amazon using it to deliver packages. We're not just talking about researchers like Mr. Causey, who we'll have on later in the show today, who's using unmanned aerial systems to study tornadoes or other types of weather phenomenon. And we're not just talking about hobbyists who, for leisure, use small unmanned aerial systems in parks for fun. I'm talking about everything that we can use unmanned aerial systems for and all the things that we haven't thought about using unmanned aerial systems for. And how do you get involved? It's really simple. Start researching. Don't rely on what you hear on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, and CNBC. I'm not discrediting the news and coverage that they do, but primarily what they do are scare tactic campaigns. They want to make you afraid of a lot of the things that are going on with unmanned aerial systems. They want to talk about privacy. They want to talk about laws, and they want to talk about the dangers that are associated with them. And you never really hear about some of the good things that are coming from the use of unmanned aerial systems. A lot of people don't know this, but Domino's is already using unmanned aerial systems to deliver pizzas in Europe. They're using unmanned aerial systems in Germany to study bridges and check for structures. They're using them to check on wind turbines that make the roles of these workers who are out there doing these jobs that much easier. But you don't hear about that sort of thing. And we need to talk about those things. It needs to become a public awareness campaign that I'm not just involved in and other interest groups are not involved in. You have to get involved in this. You have to do the research, and you have to spread the word. We have to work together on this sort of thing, because that's the only way that this is really going to be successful. So I'm asking you today or tomorrow to go out, do some research, and get informed, because it's only through knowledge that we can make an informed opinion. We'll be right back after this.
Support and funding for this podcast has been made possible by the Vaudenoy Group. The Von Noy Group, supporting arts and culture through charitable donations.
Before we get started with our interview with Mr. Warren Causey and the Sirens Project, I want to talk about current news with unmanned aerial systems. Beth, do you remember Mr. Ralph Perker?
I do. I don't remember what he did.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Ralph Perker was a gentleman who used a Zephyr right-wing air glider unmanned aerial system at the University of Virginia at a medical school in Virginia.
Oh, that's right. He was fined with $10,000 for commercial use of unmanned aerial system.
Correct.
Yes.
Now, in the initial court case, the FAA cited him a $10,000 fine for using the unmanned aerial system recklessly.
Right.
A judge ended up throwing that court case out because... Do you have the article in front of you? Can you Google it real quick?
Yes.
Okay. As I recall, they ended up throwing the court case out because the FAA had not issued an enforceable regulatory rule governing model aircraft operation. And I believe it was AC-91-57.
Right. They stated that it was voluntary compliance.
Right. Basically, what the judge was saying is that until the FAA had a legal definition that distinguishes model airplanes from unmanned aerial systems, that the FAA cannot claim that they had internal memos which grant legal authority to the FAA to fine people for using drones.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, now that took place earlier this year. I want to say
March, April
time frame. Now, if you've seen the video, and this is another point to bring up, if you've seen the video, and we have, and we've had it on our website in the past, and we'll put it back up there for you to watch. If you've seen the video, this is a misconception. He actually, he's flying it at the university for Hobby King, a unmanned aerial system parts supplier online. HobbyKing.com, a great website, by the way. You should definitely check it out. www.HobbyKing.com. Anyways, I know some shameless promotion right there for him. I hope they appreciate that. So anyways...
We need some sponsorship, I guess.
Yeah, there we go. So he's flying it at the university, but he's not flying it for the university.
Correct.
Now, did you watch the video?
I have.
And what did you think of the video?
Just
overall, did you think it was a cool video?
Yeah, it's all right.
Okay, it was a good
video.
Some
guys flying the aircraft around over through a university.
So, flash forward. The judge threw the case out right now. Now, let's bring us up to date. Tuesday, November 20th, the National Transportation and Safety Board has actually sided with the Federal Aviation Administration.
Right, they reversed the original ruling.
That's right, they did. And according to the ruling, they said that the FAA does have the authority for regulations that prohibit operation of aircraft in reckless manner and that can be included to small unmanned aerial systems. So both small hobbyist planes and UASs are now encompassed under both of these, and it's supported by the National Transportation Safety Board and the FAA, saying that they do have the authority to do that. Now, a couple different times in these articles that we've seen, I noticed that they use the term reckless, the reckless use of unmanned aerial systems. Now, you watched the video, and so did I. Did you see him using it recklessly?
There are a few instances where in the video, you can see some reckless use.
Like
specifically
what?
At 2 minutes and 31 seconds.
We're getting specific here.
Very specific. So you see the unmanned aerial system kind of take a dive down towards an overpass, and then it goes through a small tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two or three cars and a bicycle, some pedestrians on the street.
There was a bicycle and pedestrians on the street?
I don't remember. Okay. Pedestrians.
No, I remember.
So,
you brought up the bicyclist, and I remember the bicyclist. Now, here's an interesting part that I want to make very clear on that. Now, had he flown that close to the bicyclist, which he did, relatively close. Now, had the bicyclist become unnerved by it, I guess is the best term that I can come up with right now for it, and had he lost control of the bike, fallen, had an accident, crashed into a car, or anything else. Now, this is a really big issue that's going to be addressed later, both legally and by insurance companies. Had he caused an accident as a direct result of that unmanned aerial system, who do you think would have been held liable for that?
Well, for sure him.
Yeah.
But maybe the university as well. We don't know if the university sanctioned this. However, it is on university property. So
right.
We don't know. Right.
Yeah. No, so. we don't know, but it'll be interesting to see, especially in the coming years, in 2015, once the FAA releases their regulations, well, or their recommendations for regulations, I should say, in 2015. It'll be interesting to see how insurance companies handle this, and it'll be interesting to see how our legal, our justice system frames this out, because the FAA, as I was saying, the FAA and the National Transportation Safety Board used the term reckless. Now, how do we define reckless? Now, will that be, do you suppose, on a case-by-case basis, or?
I know that the Federal Aviation Regulation is probably a very huge book. So from any other government document, I'm sure there is a lot of definition in there.
Do you think However, it might be too broad?
That's basically what the NTSB said, is the use of the word aircraft mm-hmm. is a broad definition. And for this case, looking at it, an aircraft is an aircraft large or small. If it flies in the air, they're saying it is subject to that regulation stating that all aircrafts must operate in a safe manner. So
it'll be interesting if they're supporting the an aircraft is an aircraft is an aircraft stance, then I wonder if the same laws and insurance policies that are associated with large aircrafts, commercial aircrafts, will then be used with smaller aircrafts and with unmanned aerial systems when it comes to commercial use of unmanned aerial systems, if somebody loses control of it.
I think you're stepping a little far. So what this decision basically means is that the NTSB basically said we need to take these broad definitions and define them a little better.
I think you're right. Maybe I am getting a little ahead of myself here for future regulations, but bottom line, future laws and regulations, I should say. But I think at the end, what it's going to happen, what it's going to come down to is it's going to come on to Congress to make these determinations. And I think it'll come back to the FAA to determine what these regulations are. So we will see. We'll be right back.
If you or your company would like to sponsor an episode of UAS Today, please contact us at podcast@uas-today.com.
My guest today is a mechanical engineering technology student attending Southern Polytech State University in Georgia. He is the co-founder of the Sirens Project, Mr. Warren Causey. Warren, I'd like to thank you for being a guest on our show today.
Thank you for having me.
What inspired you and your team to get involved with using small unmanned aerial systems for storm chasing?
Well, it's kind of been a consolidation of a couple of different things. I, for one, have always been interested in weather, especially severe weather, as it relates to tornadoes, since I was a young child. And so once I was able to drive by myself, I just started chasing tornadoes and getting out in the weather and kind of experiencing it firsthand. And it wasn't until later that I actually met the guys that I work with now here at Southern Poly at the school that we attend. And really what led this whole endeavor was the events that happened on May 31st, 2013 in El Reno, Oklahoma, where I was chasing the world's ended up being the world's largest tornado at 2.6 miles wide. And, we almost didn't make it out of there. And a lot of chasers didn't. In fact, we lost some friends and colleagues, the Twistex team, Tim Samaras, Paul Samaras, and Carl Young. And they were trying to gather data on these superstorms. And so it just kind of occurred to me that there's got to be, a better way to research tornadoes and to understand how they work from a safer perspective. And so it was after that event in May that I actually met Nolan Lunsford here at Southern Poly in one of our one of our engineering graphics classes. And, you know, we just started chit-chatting back and forth and discovered that we had the same interests as far as unmanned aerial vehicles go. And it just kind of hit us at that point that, you know, we could combine these two interests and really do something that could revolutionize how tornadoes are researched and predicted in the future. And so we decided to take our interest in unmanned aerial vehicles and combine them with our interest in weather, and that's where the science project was born.
Was the use of unmanned aerial systems your first choice when trying to study tornadoes?
It was. Traditionally, meteorologists have been using land-based probes to deploy in the path and hope that the tornado's trajectory intersects with where you drop the package. And so, you know, it just kind of seems a little bit difficult to get in the right place at the right time, but you can eliminate that problem with unmanned aerial vehicles by actually going to the tornado. And, you know, so you don't have to worry about your road network or anything like that. You can actually intercept the tornado instead of hoping, you know, that you placed your probe in the right spot.
Let's talk about the safety concerns that are associated with storm chasing. You've mentioned the loss of life of some of your friends to tornadoes. What kind of safety concerns do you face in using your small unmanned aerial system when you go out chasing tornadoes?
Well, you know, the beauty about the unmanned aerial system is that we can deploy our sensor package from a safe remote location. Instead of getting as close as we can to the tornado to deploy a ground-based probe, we can actually hang back outside of the main circulation with a lot safer visibility. Is, you know, extremely limited when you're close. But when you hang back, you're able to see the whole picture. You're able to see the storm motion. You're able to better predict where the storm is heading. And so from that aspect, you know, unmanned aerial systems is pretty much eliminates almost all danger associated with getting close to tornadoes and being able to intercept them.
What type of unmanned aerial system will you be using to collect your data?
We are using the airfoil itself is actually a delta wing. It's similar to a B-2 stealth bomber, where it's just a flying wing. There's no rudder. It's all Elevon control. And so this allows us to get a greater amount of speed than a multi-body aircraft. Since our aircraft is unibody, we're able to eliminate a lot of the surface area that is accommodated with other types of aircraft. And so we can slice through those low-level winds a lot more efficiently and a lot faster using the airfoil that we have chosen. It's a lot better than using, say, a multi-rotor, also because you have greater payload capacity and you have greater flight times than a multi-rotor type of aircraft. So that's kind of why we went with the wing. It's almost like a dart, where we can just really penetrate the low-level wind shear and be able to intercept the tornado.
Once you fly your unmanned aerial system into the tornado, will you still be able to control it while it's in there?
The idea is that the wing is disposable, so we will not be able to control the aircraft once it's entered the tornado. However, the sensor package that is integrated into the wing will be transmitting data back through the internet, and we can see the data live. We can see the video feed live, and at that point, which is the whole goal, at that point the wing and the sensor package become a part of the debris, and we can see the different types of dynamics that are happening inside of a tornado from the debris perspective. And so this allows us to see different patterns inside the tornado, as well as how debris will interact when it comes in contact with other surfaces.
So far, how many of your systems have you been able to build?
We have built a total of 3 that have been tested and revised, and we have just manufactured our final one that we'll be basing everything else off of. Also, if we get the proper funding, we can then take our manufacturing to outfits that are more capable of producing these types of aircraft, and get them, you know, professionally made by people with reputable names.
What kind of data will you be collecting?
We're collecting several different types, and this is the this is what's going to be really cool about this project. As we're recording barometric pressure, which pressure drop is key in the formation of a tornado. And so we're going to be looking for different types of pressure drops inside the tornado. We'll be looking at relative humidity. We'll be looking at temperature. And we're also going to be looking at G-forces. So we're going to be measuring, you know, the rotational forces that the sensor package is experiencing while it's inside the tornado. And so we'll take these data sets and plot them in three-dimensional space using longitude, latitude, and elevation in an engine such as Google Earth. So we can import the data, and it'll be three-dimensional, and it'll be interactive. So we can color code or label the different data points in real time, and you can actually see the data unfolding. You can replay it. You can do a fly-through. I mean, you can really get in and interact with the data and manipulate it. And this will also help high-resolution simulators that are used, supercomputers that simulate supercells initiating and all the way to the formation of tornadoes. We can enhance that data with real data sets that we found in the real world, so it no longer becomes a simulation, but a replica of what actually happened inside that tornado.
After you have your first successful flight into the tornado, what do you plan to do with the data?
Part of the data we would like to send to our university, actually, who has a very reputable civil engineering program, and they can do structural analysis on the sensor package as far as rotational forces go and the different inertias that it's experiencing inside a tornado to better construct houses and buildings and other structures that are in tornado-prone areas. That's one thing we'd really like to do with the data, as well as take the atmospheric properties such as the relative humidity, barometric pressure, and temperature, and allow meteorologists to use this data to help simulate current tornado forecasts and really refine how tornadoes are understood. That way, when you know, a tornado outbreak occurs in the future, they'll have more understanding about which storms will produce a tornado and which ones won't. That's the real key here, is not every supercell thunderstorm or a thunderstorm with a rotating updraft produce tornadoes. There's something that happens inside the supercell that triggers tornado genesis, and so that's what we're trying to differentiate between. We got to find that one pattern or that one trigger that causes a tornado to form, and when we discover that or unravel that mystery or get closer to unraveling that mystery, then you eliminate the false alarms that come with tornado warnings. You can only warn the storms that need to be warned, and people will start taking tornado warnings more serious. So it's kind of a trickle effect. We find the source of the tornado, and then people ultimately take tornado warnings more serious, and hopefully we can save lives through doing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really hope that your flights are successful and you're able to collect the data that you can use. What is the current warning time that people have prior to a tornado touching down?
It's usually people have around between 8 and 13 minutes of lead time before the tornado directly impacts their location. And so if you're in the shower or you're doing something else and you don't get the warning, chances are you're not going to ever get it, and then it might be too late. And so if we can extend that lead time out, if we can find out which storms are going to produce tornadoes soon after they've been initiated, based off of patterns that we locate inside the tornado and inside the supercell thunderstorm, we'll be able to warn those storms immediately or as quickly as possible, and hopefully increase warning lead time from 8 to 13 minutes to maybe 20 or 30 minutes even, you know, and give that person an extra few minutes to get to shelter or to prepare for the tornado's impact.
You mentioned that you plan to send the data to University Southern Polytech. Is the university currently involved with your project?
they know about the project. There has been no, collaboration at this point as far as testing simulated data or any test trials as far as how this would be carried out. But they are aware of the project, and they are aware of the intentions of the project. So once we do have a successful intercept and successful data acquisition, then we'll take steps forward into implementing this into their structural analysis programs and different laboratories that we have on campus in order to analyze the different aspects inside of a tornado and how it relates to structure and debris.
Well, at least they're signing off on it then. It's good that you have the university's support. In many situations where you have people using small or large unmanned aerial systems, they either refuse to or do not consider getting university support. And I happen to believe that one of the keys to a successful integration of unmanned aerial systems into our national airspace is through research and development with universities. So I think it's great that your university is getting involved with you on it.
Yes, I agree.
Once you have your successful flights and you have sent the data to universities, research labs, and the data proves useful, which I'm sure that it will, where do you see your project going?
We'd like to get as many data sets as possible. So if we have one successful data set, then we should go for more. And I think we're kind of a proof of concept. I've had people tell me, we're kind of waiting back to see how your project does before we go on with our projects, that have to do with similar setups and similar systems. So it's kind of a proof of concept. This has never been done before. And so we're going to take it upon ourselves to be the first to do it and to prove that this is very, very valuable as far as atmospheric research goes. So, yeah, we would just like to take it a step further and just get more data sets and use more systems and eventually be able to use maybe multiple drones at once that are scanning the tornado. You just implement more and more of the same technology, but in different ways to get even a better picture. So once we do it the first time, then I think we can, we've proven that it can be done over and over again, and that's what we'd like to do.
Could you see your unmanned aerial system being used to study other types of storms?
Yes, yeah, so I think that would be the next step would be to intercept different types of atmospheric phenomena with the same type of system and really get a grasp on, how our atmosphere works as a whole. So, yeah, I don't think it's limited to tornadoes at all. I think that once we prove that it's effective and that it's useful, that other types of storms and other types of weather can definitely benefit from being observed through unmanned systems such as what we're using.
Do you think that you and your partners will form a business with this small unmanned aerial system after you graduate?
Yes, we'd love to eventually move into the realm of making a business out of this. In some form or fashion. I mean, it's definitely a passion of mine, and I know the other guys feel the exact same way. So it would definitely be a great opportunity for us to not stop just at research and development, but maybe take it even further and make a career out of it.
Will your company design, test, and sell new models of unmanned aerial systems that are specifically designed for storm chasers? Or do you see yourself remaining in the field chasing storms and collecting data?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. Honestly, I think if it were possible, we'd like to do both. But I think maybe manufacturing them and getting into that realm would enable us to be able to chase storms and still hold on to the research and development side of things.
What are some of the concerns that you have with venturing into this business?
The biggest concern, honestly, is the regulations that haven't been implemented yet. And I'm just excited, anxious, and worried all at the same time to see what those regulations are and how it'll affect, the unmanned aerial community and how it'll affect these types of systems. Because I think the applications of these are absolutely enormous. And I think so many people could benefit. I think the nation could benefit as a whole from these types of systems. I think it would definitely stimulate the economy. I definitely think it would stimulate a lot of other areas such as research and development like we're involved in now. So yeah, I think the regulations and the laws that will be put into place in the not so distant future are my main concern.
I think that those are some of the concerns, some of the same concerns that are shared by everyone in the unmanned aerial system community. Warren, we're about out of time today. I'd like to thank you for being a guest on the show. I wish you the best of luck with your flight, and I hope that you are successful in collecting your data. I'd love to have you back on the show after your test flight so that you can tell us everything, how everything went.
Absolutely. I'll definitely look forward to that.
Thank you for being on the show with us today, Warren.
Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on our podcast are those of the authors, producers, and our guests. They do not automatically reflect the views or opinions of any organization or government agency that are guests on our podcast, nor do they reflect the official policy or position of any U.S. government agency. If you have information that you would like to have discussed on our show or would like to be a guest on our show, please contact us on our website, uas-today.com, or email us at podcast@uas-today.com. Thanks for listening.